This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
The BBC.
Welcome to the BBC Music Magazine podcast. I'm Oliver Condy, the magazine's editor. And with me in the studio, actually in remote studios, are Jeremy Pound, the deputy editor, and editorial assistant Freya Parr.
Hello.
Hi.
Tell me where you are. Freya, where are you?
I'm in my very glamorous bedroom in the centre of Bristol. Loving life.
How exciting. Jeremy, what about you?
I'm in my dining room in grey and chilly Cheltenham today.
Fantastic. And I'm up in North Bristol in my spare room, actually, with the digital organ behind me, just to sort of keep me in the music mood throughout the day. So this month, it's the turn of the May issue. This was the last issue we put to press before we went off on our coronavirus working from home period. As usual, the magazine's packed with features, news, interviews. We're going to take you through remotely in this podcast through the magazine. So let's get on with music news. So there's really only one story this month, actually, and it is coronavirus. It is COVID-19. All concerts have been cancelled. Festivals have been cancelled. Orchestras have been mothballed. But through the gloom, there have been musicians who have been doing a few things online, streamed concerts, things from their front room. Jeremy, what's caught your eye throughout this rather gloomy period?
Well, I've been a little bit fickle in my choices. I've sort of been ambling about, kind of going from one to the next. However, the one which I've gone back to on a daily basis is, it's always very handy if you've got two world-class musicians that actually live in the same house together, as in the case of pianist Tom Poster and violinist Elena Uriosta. On a daily basis, they've been streaming what they call the Uri Post Jukebox, where they play together. She plays something nice on the violin and he accompanies her on the piano. Mm. And they've done a range of stuff from sort of show tunes to more traditional classical stuff like Fauré and Franquet, etc. And it's really nice. It's really good. And they presumably they're going to carry on doing it until we're kind of back out in the open again.
Yeah, I hope so. I think they've changed their venue, haven't they? They've sort of relocated halfway
they
through.
Have, yes.
Because they've
the
probably
got changed.
Fed up with them. So, I mean, it's really frustrating for musicians to have practiced up their programmes ready for the summer festival season, which is pretty much kicking off at the moment. I mean, the Old Opera Festival only a couple of days ago was cancelled. Mm-hmm. You know, so musicians have all these wonderful programmes which they're sharing with us. I have enjoyed watching Boris Giltburg do his Beethoven series and a few masterclasses and that sort of thing. And And I've been enjoying Igor Levit doing some of his music from his front room as well. There have been a whole variety of people. And of course, choirs have been getting together and have been singing together. People have been multi-tracking, which has been rather fun
Eric
as well.
Eric Whitaker's virtual choir must be coming into its own right now. They were kind of very much ahead of the game, weren't they?
That's right. Gareth Malone's
trying to get their techniques.
Well, Gareth Malone's been starting an online rehearsal series.
Yeah.
And I know that... Jess Gillam has been starting up an orchestra. So she's posting parts online. You can take part. And I think they're going to be stitching it all together. That's actually happening as we speak. But the BBC, Freya, have been doing all sorts of things as well, haven't they? There's a thing called Culture in Quarantine.
Yeah, so this is a BBC Arts initiative. And it's kind of, they're branding it as a sort of virtual festival of the arts. So it's music, opera, theatre, dance, literature, kind of anything that's been cancelled basically in the next few months, from kind of Hay Literary Festival to Aldeburgh, like you mentioned. And they're sort of transferring it all online, whatever they can, and kind of mix of things. So it's got virtual choirs from the BBC orchestras and choirs, as you mentioned. Lots of artists from home doing home sessions. They've got mixes and playlists, which actually we also are doing on classical-music.com. So you can head over there and have a listen to some of our playlists and on our Spotify and Apple Music pages as well. And they're also doing some other bits and bobs, like they're broadcasting Beethoven's Fidelio over on BBC Four, I believe. And they're also doing Max Richter's Sleep, which is the 8-hour piece that is to be performed overnight and listened to literally as you sleep. So that was premiered in 2015, and they're rebroadcasting that. So that'll be on Radio 3. So it'll be a nice way to switch off overnight.
Yes, absolutely. It's a worrying time, though. Restful sleep is what we'll need, I think. But if you want to keep up to date with all the streams, all the live streams, all the concerts from people's front rooms, all the sort of excitement going on in the classical music world, you can head to our website at classical-music.com, and you'll see a page there on the homepage which will direct you to a list which is constantly updated with all the plans people... and usually they're sort of last-minute things, aren't they? But people are doing... I mean, I've enjoyed, for example, Joe Stilgo, who's been sort of in his garden shed fulfilling sort of requests to perform show tunes and improvisations and that sort of thing.
Yeah, sometimes the kind of ad hoc ones are even more entertaining. Sean Sheeb has started doing more formal ones, because I think in replacement of the Leicester Music Festival that had been cancelled. But he's now just started doing like late night lute playing. So he's just there with his whiskey in usually a quite outrageous outfit, and just sitting in bed playing a bit of lute. And it is so nice. It's
sitting
a nice
in bed
way
playing
to end
the
evening.
Lute.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Just very wholesome.
It's very Tudor-like.
It is very Tudor-like.
Fantastic. Right, let's move on to this month's magazine.
This month's magazine.
So we're very keen to stress that we're producing the magazine as usual, albeit from our various rooms at homes. Subscribers will be getting their magazine delivered in the normal way, but many of you won't be able to get to the shops to pick up your issue because the newsagents, many of them, are closed. So we're offering all non-subscribers a totally risk-free, no-strings way to get the next 3 issues to you with free delivery. So just go to classical-music.com/offer. And you'll be able to pay a one-off amount without setting up a direct debit, and you'll save 15% on the newsstand price. And that's a way for you to get the next 3 issues. Starting actually, if you do it now, you'll have to get the June issue onwards, but you'll get the next 3 issues delivery free. So that's fantastic. Anyway, so here's some music for you to introduce the cover story of this month's magazine. Thank you. So that was the final movement of the Ravel Violin Sonata performed by Maxim Vengerov Violin, this month's cover star with pianist Rustem Saitkulov. And that was from a live recital that they gave at Carnegie Hall in October 2018. And that's going to be, that is available now on the Adagio streaming website. So it's a new signing that Maxim Vengerov has made, an exclusive signing to Adagio. So Maxim Vengerov is our cover star and celebrating 40 years on the stage. It's quite incredible, really, isn't it, Jeremy? Mm. 40 years. I mean, he's 45 or 46 or something. You know.
That simply tells you just how young he was when he started. We ought to mention that, of course, it's not been a kind of straight 40 years. He hasn't been playing that, all those 40 years nonstop. He had a break, of course, because he took time out from the violin and learnt other skills, etc., and then came back to it refreshed as well, as he mentions in the piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a time away. He's been actually quite frank about his time away. We all assumed back a few years back that he'd injured himself. I think the rumour was he'd fallen over and dislocated his shoulder or something like that. When in fact, I think he felt he was just on the treadmill. I mean, he was burnt out. An incredible violinist, but just so much in demand. And he just, all he saw was the inside of hotels and airports. And gosh, it must have been a very lonely existence.
Yeah, particularly if you've been doing it since that young age, it's everything you've ever known and ever done. So it must totally understandable that he went through a burnout phase of some kind.
I've heard this said many times actually by soloists when you chat to them, is that it's all very glamorous being a concerto soloist or a recital soloist. And this actually particularly applies to pianists who are lonesome beasts at the best of times. Mm. I remember chatting to one of them and say they love doing chamber music purely for the reason that they actually travel around in threes and fours rather than just by themselves. Mm. But it's quite often, if you're a concerto soloist, you turn up at a big city, at a big concert hall, you do your gig and you disappear again. Mm. Sometimes they might look after you and take you out for a meal, but sometimes you don't even get that. You just get a nice hotel room.
In some ways, it can be rather more lonely in a way. I've had a very limited experience of doing the Saint-Saëns around the country with the Brussels Philharmonic. And of course, you're not there long enough to get to know any of the members of the orchestra. So they're all off in their sort of groups, the brass and the woodwind and the strings, all sort of, wandering around because they've known each other for decades. And here you are as a soloist coming in and you're just sort of plonked there and then... Mm. You move on. But Maxim Vengerov has been developing his career as conductor as well. So that's another important strand that he discusses in the magazine with us.
And that's a lot more of a sort of convivial post, isn't it? Because actually he himself says that as a conductor, you are part of this ensemble. You're there with the same people on a daily basis. You're working with them, you're developing them. It's a very, very different relationship between conductor and orchestra and soloist and orchestra. Mm. So you must love that.
But he's taken it very seriously. I mean, a lot of violinists or instrumentalists, I think they sort of drop the instrument and then immediately pick up the baton and assume that they can do it. I mean, there are so many examples of that. Some are good at it, some are really terrible. But Maxim Vengerov went and studied with this chap called Yuri Simonov, who's a real Russian maestro. So I think he was quite an old-fashioned mentor for him, took him under his wing, trained him up. I think Maxim Vengerov went through a degree or a diploma or something, and then he's emerged as a qualified conductor. So it's going to be fascinating to see how he progresses in the next few years.
Mm. Yep.
So the cover CD.
Right, well, on this month's cover CD, we've actually got a bit of a special performance. It is Bruckner's Eighth Symphony, and it is performed by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Donald Runicles, who, of course, used to be their principal conductor and actually is still their emeritus conductor still to this day.
I love hearing 19th century stuff from Donald Runicles. I mean, his Wagner is just fantastic. His Bruckner and Mahler, it's just amazing.
He is a big picture man, I'd say.
Yeah, and this is, absolutely. And Bruckner, I mean, we shouldn't really be getting the whole of Bruckner Ace on one CD. I have it usually spread over two. So I don't think he's taken it that much more quickly, but it's a wonderful performance.
Okay, well, we're going to hear it now, a little bit of it. We're going to plunge into the beginning of the third movement, the Adagio Feierlich Langsam doch nicht schleppend. Here we go.
So that was the third movement of Bruckner's Symphony No. 8, performed by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and Donald Runicles. And you'll find that on the May Issues cover CD, which is out now. Jeremy, you're going to take us over to the West, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm going to take us to the Caribbean. At the end of January, I flew out to Havana, to Cuba, to hear a young string ensemble, which I've never heard before. They're called Camerata Romeo. And they've actually been playing since the 1990s. And they are all female, most of them in their 20s, one or two of them slightly older than that. And they were founded by someone called Zenaida Romeo, as I say, in the 1990s. And they specialised in Cuban music, Cuban classical music. And I had a lovely time not only hearing them play, but I also got to chat to four or five of Cuba's leading current contemporary composers who are fascinating. We sat there for 2 hours during the fat in old Havana, in a very old monastery, drinking lots of cups of coffee. It was very kind of, it was very Hemingway-ish. and then, as I say, I then kind of got to listen to Camerata Romeo play. And they've got a new disc out, which is called Bella Habana. The title says its own thing. And it's Cuban music from the beginning of the 20th century to the current day.
Fantastic. We don't normally think of Cuban classical music, do we? We just think of the sort of Buena Vista Social Club, and that's pretty much it. So it's exciting to be able to sort of delve into, much like last month when we were listening to Villa Lobos and a little bit more sort of unknown Brazilian stuff. I mean, it's just nice to hear the Latin influences in classical music, really.
Exactly. And I found it really fascinating chatting to these composers, because I did say, I kind of launched this huge conversation by saying, what defines Cuban classical music? And they're all so knowledgeable. They actually took me right back to the 18th century and kind of ran me through this history period, telling me exactly how it developed and how there's European influence in there. Like actually all of Cuban culture is this kind of wonderful mixture of Creole, Caribbean and European. And the music is exactly the same. And they're saying you can hear European dances in there, but you can also hear kind of local rhythms. It's wonderful stuff. I really like it. And I have to say that Camerata Romeo play it superbly as well.
Talking about much more exotic, we're going from west to east, Freya, and we're going all the way over to India. Go on, tell us what we're talking about in this month's magazine.
Yes, so this year is Ravi Shankar's centenary year, the sitar player and composer. We've got a great piece, kind of potted history of Ravi Shankar's music by his biographer, Oliver Krask. So yeah, Shankar wrote operas and symphonies and really bridged the gap between the East and West musical traditions, and actually combined classical and jazz and a lot of Indian music, which on paper seem quite incompatible, but actually he just sort of blended them superbly. And he kind of collaborated with the great and the good, the Philip Glass, the Yehudi Menuhins, and Previn obviously commissioned him to write his first ever sitar concerto as well, way back when. So although disappointingly, obviously, his symphony was going to be scheduled for April this year at the South Bank Centre, but that obviously is no longer happening. So in the meantime, you can read our fabulous piece all about Ravi Shankar and discover some of his music. And there'll be lots of stuff online about him on our website as well, as to where to start with his music. And then also you can even read the new biography of Shankar by Oliver Krask, who has written this piece. And that's still published this month by Faber and Faber. And that's called Indian Sun, The Life and Music of Ravi Shankar.
If we're talking about where to start with his music, Oliver actually in his piece talks about the three sitar concertos. I would recommend starting with the second rather than with the first. The first is kind of, it's a lot simpler, but a lot of it just sounds like it's very, very much led by the sitar. There's not an awful lot of interaction between the sitar and the orchestra in the first concerto, whereas the second, he really starts to do all sorts of clever things and it's really engaging listening.
The second concerto is also the one that his daughter has kind of championed, Anushka Shankar, who's also a sitar player. She's kind of championed that as well over the years. So that's a good place to start.
It's fiendishly difficult.
I mean, all sitar music sounds difficult to me. I think it's incredible, but
yeah,
disappointed to not be hearing his symphony. Yeah,
absolutely. Right, let's move on to First Listen. So before we kick off with sharing our favourite new recordings, we want you to tell us what you've been discovering during the last few weeks. Have you been using the time to discover new masterpieces? Have you been using the time to really get to reacquaint yourself with old favourites? Are you picking up an instrument that you've dusted off over the past few weeks? please get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. We've been doing our own sort of musical discoveries ourselves. So please, please email us music@classical-music.com. So I brought you some Cyrillus Creek. So Cyrillus Creek was an Estonian composer living either side of 1918, which was the Declaration of Estonian Independence. So he was a bit of a national hero and really sort of was one of the composers who kicked off the Estonian national style, going back to incorporate Estonian folk songs in much of his music. Gorgeous, gorgeous choral composer. And there's a new recording on ECM, which is performed by Vox Clamantis, which is a BBC Music Magazine award winner, actually. And they've put together much of his music. And I want to play you this sort of Estonian folk hymn, which Cyrillus Creek has arranged. And it's called Whilst Greater Is Our Poverty, Still Greater Is Our Blessing, which seems very apt in these times. So that was a piece by Cyrillus Creek, Whilst Great Is Our Poverty, Still Greater Is Our Blessing, on the ECM label. And the album is called The Suspended Harp of Babel, and it's sung by Vox Clamantis, and also includes introductions and little episodes played on the nickel harper and the kanel, which are two traditional Estonian instruments, and sort of gives it a lovely sort of magical timelessness. I absolutely adored this one. Freya, what have you brought us?
Something slightly different. I've really enjoyed actually working from home. I've been able to sort of, rather than listen with headphones on, I've been really utilising the forces of my of my sound system in my room, and probably to the chagrin of my flatmates. But I've found an album that is absolutely perfect for really blasting out. It's works by Gustavo Diaz Jerez, and it's called Magek, I believe, M-A-G-H-E-K, seven symphonic poems about the Canary Islands. And it's performed by the Royal Scottish National Orchestra under Eduardo Portal, and it's on Signum Classics. And it's a double disc, and each piece is about 20 minutes and is inspired by a different island in the Canary Islands. And it's these enormous soundscapes that all have these really unique sound worlds, but all kind of have this amazing cohesion. And so we're going to listen to Shigade, I'm sure that's pronouncing correctly, for orchestra. And this is based on the island, which is really rocky and full of forests. And yeah, you can hear the waves crashing against the shore and the birds flying overhead, and it's magnificent.
Jeremy, what have you brought us?
Well, many years ago, as a chorister, I was very familiar with the music of William Matthias, or I say very familiar, I was very familiar with his carols, such as his Wassail and A Babe Was Born. Absolutely love them, really rowdy pieces. But I don't know much of his music beyond that, so I was delighted to see the disc called A Vision of Time and Eternity, and it's on the Naxos label, and this is a selection of his songs and chamber music. It's a very eclectic mix of songs sung by baritone Jeremy Hugh Williams, who is absolutely fantastic in them, and also chamber works for a mixed bunch of instruments, kind of flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, etc., string quartet. What I'm going to pick out here, which has really caught my ear, it's very sort of mystical and magical, is his harp sonata. And it is played on this disc by Michel Gott, and it kind of takes you into this sort of other world. And I'm going to introduce here the beginning of the second movement of Matthias's harp sonata, the Allegro Vivo. Mm-hmm. And that was on a disc called A Vision of Time and Eternity and on the Naxos label. And the catalogue number is 8.574053. And lovely it is too.
Fantastic. Well, that brings us to the end of this month's podcast. Our jingles, each inspired by a different choral composer, were written by Christopher Maxim. And our podcast is produced here in Bristol by Jack Bateman and Ben Uatt. And thank you to them especially for putting together all our recordings from dotted various parts of the Southwest. So thank you very much indeed. Anyway, it's very goodbye from all of us, and we'll see you next month. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
The BBC Music Magazine Podcast.